My next guest, Jason Donofield. I am so excited to get this guy on the air. You guys have no idea. I have been praising WireGuard since the day it came out, and I have been using it both in production and in my home lab to test things out. It is the next evolution of VPN. It is a VPN created from the ground up with the expressed purpose of being easy to use, simple to set up, secure, and use a modern code base. So without further ado, Jason Donofield, welcome to the program, sir. For those that aren't familiar, let's start with this. What is WireGuard?
WireGuard is a secure network tunnel originally made for the Linux kernel. So what that means is you could have two computers separated through the internet or through any network, and you have a secure tunnel from one to the other, like your own private internet. So people can use this between data centers, for example. Two data centers that are far apart, but they want to feel like they're connected physically. You use a secure tunnel for this, but you can also use it as a VPN for your internet traffic. So if you don't want to use your internet at home, but you want to use someone else's internet, like a VPN provider's, then you can send your traffic through their internet. If you want to access your office's network or use your office's internet, you could use a secure tunnel for that as well. So in the past, these VPN protocols have been pretty messy. Things like OpenVPN and IPsec are extremely complicated, old, lots of legacy stuff. And so WireGuard is kind of a new, fresh take on the secure tunnel idea. It uses modern cryptography, best-in-class performance, and lots of kind of defense-in-depth security techniques to really reduce the attack surface in a way that the predecessors certainly don't have.
So we have a lot of people have praised WireGuard for its simplicity and robustness, to include Linus Torvalds said he was very, very excited at the advent of having this VPN alternative. Now, I understand that this is a little different than the other flavors of VPN because this is actually in the kernel. What does that mean exactly?
So the kernel is the lowest level of the operating system. When people talk about Linux, maybe what you think of is something like Ubuntu or GNOME or KDE or something. But actually, Linux usually just refers to the kernel, which is this very low-level component that interacts with the hardware and gives other pieces of software a uniform interface for talking with the hardware. So the kernel provides things like file systems or the ability to display things on the screen or communicate with your keyboard, but it also provides a networking stack. So it talks to your Wi-Fi and Ethernet cards, gives things like TCP, but it also has network tunnels in it. And so the latest addition, as you mentioned, is WireGuard. So it's a little different to have this in the kernel. Previous VPN protocols like OpenVPN live in user space, which is kind of a higher level component. And the problem with this is that every time you want to send a packet through the tunnel, it means that user space sends the packet to the kernel. Kernel sends the packet back up to user space. User space, running OpenVPN, then makes some transformation to it, encrypts it, whatever, sends it back to the kernel, and then it gets sent off. So you have these round trips that really slow things down. So WireGuard will just send things directly to the kernel. Kernel deals with it, sends it off, and there's none of this back and forth trip. This also has advantages in the opposite direction. When you receive a packet with old OpenVPN way, the kernel would send the packet, copy it from the Ethernet card, send it back up to user space. User space does some transformation, sends it back down to the kernel. Kernel then sends it back up to user space. You have this back and forth. But with WireGuard, because it's in the kernel, we can actually take packets directly out of the ring buffer of your Ethernet hardware. We have access to all the different memory addresses that the kernel does. So we don't need any back and forth. We don't need any copies of the packet.
I understand that the code base for WireGuard is much smaller than the code base of other competing VPN protocols. Is that advantageous? And if so, why?
Yeah, so we're around 4,000-ish lines of code, which is really quite small. And there are a couple advantages. And in the first case, there might be kind of a naive performance benefit of that. If you have less code, there's less for the computer to do, and so things move faster. Now, this is obviously not true. You can have really bad algorithms in a short amount of code. But I think when you're comparing something like WireGuard with around 4,000-ish lines of code to OpenVPN and IPsec that have hundreds of thousands of lines. It's just simply doing less, no matter how you slice and dice it. The real benefit that I see is security, where WireGuard is at the size that anyone can sit down for an afternoon and read through the entire code base. And I mean, I really mean read the whole thing, read every single line, because it's just not that many lines of code. Yeah, I've worked in the security industry for many years, and a lot of times we get these source code review assessments where we're given this massive code base, you know, 100,000 lines of code, and here's a time slice to try and read it in and find vulnerabilities. And okay, you know, we do our job well and we find a bunch of vulns, and that's great. But there's always this question, you know, what if we had more time? Some of these code bases are so big. Is it really possible to cover the entire thing in some time box? And won't attackers always, theoretically anyway, have more time? So with WireGuard, hopefully there's not such an issue there where it's actually not that many lines of code. So given a pretty reasonable amount of time, you can in fact read the whole thing. And hopefully the small size will just make it appealing as something interesting and fun for security researchers to read as a weekend project. So I think in that way we get a lot more eyeballs. It also reduces the complexity quite a bit. Instead of tons of complicated interlocking subsystems like something like IPsec, we just have one very simple tunnel driver. So with reduced complexity, there's a lot reduced potential for bugs, smaller attack surface. So just in general, a better security posture.
Who is WireGuard ideally suited for? Obviously, people use VPNs for remote workers that are road warriors. We use, as you mentioned, VPNs inside of the data center to get traffic securely from one place to another. When you designed WireGuard, did you have all of these models in mind, or was there a particular user or use case that you had designed for?
I mean, initially I made WireGuard to kind of scratch my own itch. I wanted the thing for my own usage. And the other things didn't really serve that, so you know, I made this thing that's small. But I think WireGuard usually fits into the traditional things that people want to use VPNs for. So sure, road warriors, people who work in offices, data centers, interconnecting, people who just want some other services, internet traffic, mesh networks, it's very interesting for. You know, WireGuard intends to be kind of a low-level building block tool. So system integrators can build it into something bigger with integrations in places. So it really has this potential as a building block for all sorts of systems. And I think already we're seeing this being used for things I never envisioned. People are connecting it to distributed hash tables and just, you know, all sorts of creative things, because it is just a simple secure tunnel that you can do point to point, you can do point to many, many to many. I mean, all of these different topologies are possible. You just hook up the keys and then traffic can be sent, and there's not really much to do or configure as far as the tunnel part goes. So then people wind up using it for all sorts of things. So I think in general, it appeals for all sorts of different use cases. As far as users go, so we do have clients for all platforms, Mac, Windows, Linux, of course, Android, iOS, all different types of users can use it. But what we're seeing now is that people are building things on top of WireGuard to extend it to an even bigger audience. So I think the appeal of it will wind up being pretty broad.
You mentioned that people were using WireGuard for a distributed hash table. Can you elaborate on what that is and what WireGuard is doing to support it?
Oh, sure. So people want to make mesh networks, and there are many ways for peers on a mesh network to discover each other. There are some, you know, very interesting protocols like Babel or Batman that do this. But another idea that's been around for some time that people are connecting with WireGuard is you put all the different public keys in a distributed hash table. Maybe these are well known because of BitTorrent uses these for discovering different peers to download files from. But you can actually put anything in a distributed hash table and then discover all the peers that way. Add each of these peers to your WireGuard interface, and then you can talk to them. I guess people are interested in different geographic metrics within the hash table. How close are these peers? And so there have been a couple different attempts to do this. And it seems like an interesting idea. I just mentioned that because it's a kind of a very creative use of two different things that I didn't expect to ever be connected. But indeed, people are doing it because the simple WireGuard interface makes that possible.
to a certain degree, that kind of follows along with the Linux philosophy, right? You didn't make this massive thing. You just hyper-focused and made a very high-quality component here that people can then use however they see fit.
That's right. The Linux networking stack is kind of awesome in how modular and how many features it has. And a lot of people discovering WireGuard really love it. They, you know, find networking exciting and they get into setting up these tunnels. It becomes a hobby. People really get attracted to what WireGuard has to offer. But it seems like actually what's happening is they're discovering the magic of the Linux networking stack, which indeed has all these very modular components that you can fit together in interesting ways.
It sounds like WireGuard is a solution that if somebody hasn't used before, hasn't tried, they should definitely get started or at least give it a whirl. How easy or difficult is it to set up WireGuard, Jason?
It's significantly easier than the other solutions. There's no X509 certificates to set up. No certificate authorities. There's none of this. Basically, each side generates a public key. They exchange public keys. They choose what IP addresses they're going to use. That's it. And then I can send packets. WireGuard doesn't even have a concept of being connected or disconnected. Either the tunnel is there or it's not. It's up or it's down, just like any other network interface. There's no thing that the user sees that says negotiating, connecting, waiting for a response. There's none of this. It's just when you want to send a packet, you just send it. WireGuard handles all the negotiation and crypto stuff in the background, and it just works. So you swap public keys, you decide what IP addresses you want to use, and you're done. So it's pretty easy. We've intentionally held off on adding a lot of knobs and configuration options to it. WireGuard has kind of a one set of defaults, and that's what you use, and it works well. And the different parameters for making it work are basically automatically selected by WireGuard itself.
You mentioned earlier that a client exists for all of the major operating systems. Is that client a CLI-based client, a GUI-based client? Are there any plans to introduce a GUI-based client if there isn't one currently?
We have both pretty much everywhere that people are using UIs regularly. So here's the layout. On Linux, it's this kernel module. And we have the WG and WG Quick tools, which are CLI tools, and that's kind of the base. Then Linux user space has all this different plumbing. So now there are UIs that have been created by the network manager people, and there are kind of a couple other things that glue on top of the upper layers. Now, luckily, the Linux ecosystem is open source, so we kind of have all these different projects adding their take on how networking and UI should work together. And so they're providing the UIs there. We have on macOS both a command line client written in Go, WireGuard Go, as well as a normal, good-looking Swift UI client that you can get in the Mac App Store. It's free, of course, open source, all that. And that just looks like a normal app, and you don't have to press any buttons on the CLI. On Windows, we have an MSI package that you install just like any other that provides you with a nice UI and administrative tools. But you also get the CLI utilities with that too. So that's a very interesting client in that it's made both for end users to be able to click around and do things, but it's also a super modular service-based design so that enterprise admins can integrate it into their deployments. So on that platform, we have both. Then on iOS, we have just the UI client because there's not really a super thriving CLI ecosystem there. Jailbreaks aren't super common these days. On Android, we have both. We have both the normal UI that's in the Play Store, but we also have these command line utilities that can talk to the kernel implementation of WireGuard if your phone has that in the kernel. And we've actually been talking with the Android team at Google about adding that by default to all Android phones instead of just special ROMs that people make. So on Android, we have both as well. Then on the BSDs, we have just the CLI. And I assume that, depending on how their UI ecosystem goes, maybe there'll be some things there, maybe not. I don't know.
I know when WireGuard first came out, for the longest time, the recommendation was, this is very exciting, it's very cool, it is a much-needed overhaul. in the VPN world, but we don't recommend that it's used in production. With the inclusion of WireGuard into the kernel, are we now ready to say that this is ready for production use?
Yep. We're at 1.0, or we're ready to go. I realize it took a while. Got emails every week, people very impatient, a lot of people even upset about this, like, how could you put this out and then tell me not to use this? Don't you know how difficult it makes it for me to talk to my manager about it? All these kind of angry emails. But we really wanted to take our time and make sure we were doing this well, get Linux kernel integration really streamlined, make sure that the security aspects were rock solid. There have now been a number of academic security proofs done on the protocol, so we're pretty certain about that. We took our time to get the crypto implementations as rock solid as possible. We have a lot of formally verified code in there, which is great. So, I mean, this is a security-oriented project, so we didn't want to rush it. We didn't want to jump the gun. But yeah, after a number of years of development, we've hit 1.0, and I think people can start running this in production. And hopefully we'll see a number of enterprise Linux distributions adding this shortly as well.
Yes. Yeah, I was one of the, I did not send any angry emails, but I may have had some encouraging emails to say, I love this product. I hope it is released soon, because we're just very excited to have this. It's very cool. And, you know, setting it up, it literally is, I would describe it as simple as if you have set up SSH before and you've generated an SSH key pair, you can set up WireGuard.
That's right. Yeah, it's same level of simplicity.
Let me ask you this, Jason. Is there any situation where you would say WireGuard is not suited for? Is there any environment or any situation where you would say this would be the kind of thing that you might want to look at an alternative for? It's not really what we designed WireGuard for.
Yeah, I mean, WireGuard is an opinionated design. So for starters, it's layer three. It's for IP networks. Some people with, you know, older networks, weirder networks, don't want to be tunneling IP. They want to be tunneling raw Ethernet frames over layer two. I don't think this is a great way to design your networks, a great way to tunnel things. But some people, for whatever reason, legacy designs or just weird preference, actually want layer two. And WireGuard very explicitly does not do that. Let's see. There are other things where people are very interested in certificate authorities and X509 integration and kind of these big behemoths. Of kind of the PKI from yesteryear. And WireGuard does not use that. There's just very basic public keys that you can exchange. Now, of course, WireGuard can integrate into anything because it is this building block. You can build integrations on top of LDAP, on top of even, you know, TLS over some HTTP REST interface. There's kind of all this variety for how you could integrate it into existing X509 things, but it does not itself use X509. And there are a lot of kind of old school admins who still think that putting X509 in everything is a good idea. I do not think that's a good idea. So WireGuard doesn't do that. It doesn't encourage you to center things around that. But of course, you can integrate it into anything.
I have heard some of those discussions occurring. I have watched some of those discussions unfold at various different Linux conferences. And so to me, what I take away from this conversation, frankly, Jason, is that you really understand your user base. You understand the environment that you're working in. You understand the competitors that are out there, and you're trying to navigate those waters. And I think you're doing a great job. If you were to tie into LDAP, Active Directory, so on and so forth, because this is a module inside of the kernel and there's a limit to how much stuff we want the kernel to be working on, would you say that the tie into some sort of central auth or LDAP, would that happen in user space then?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the kernel part of WireGuard is just this very basic tunnel. You exchange key, you exchange IP addresses, and then you can start sending packets. The question is now, what keys do we exchange? How do we get these public keys? How do we agree that these belong to each other? You know, some people exchange these in person. Some people exchange these over SSH. There are kind of all sorts of ways to exchange it. So if you wanted to instead, say, exchange it over LDAP or exchange it over an HTTP REST interface, that would just be another way of exchanging it, something exterior to WireGuard. So WireGuard doesn't really care how you learn this initial information about each other, which I think is why it's so appealing to systems integrators, because they kind of already have these things set. For example, people doing cloud deployments are now running this with Kubernetes, where it turns out that Kubernetes already has all these deployment things, so you can send things to all of your different machines. And adding WireGuard information in that is just another easy thing to slap on top of the already existing deployment mechanism. And then you give it to WireGuard and the kernel does its thing there. So if you wanted to do this with LDAP or Active Directory or anything like that, it's the same exact thing. You use the things you already know. Once you get these keys, you tell WireGuard about it, and then WireGuard takes care of the rest.
I understand that getting WireGuard on Windows had some challenges and created kind of an experience for you. Talk about that.
Yeah, Windows was definitely a challenge. And, you know, Windows programming always is. A lot of Linux people or open source people will speak very poorly about programming on the Windows environment, how much it's awful, they hate it. But to be honest, though, once I get going on there, I get kind of addicted to it. It's so complicated. There are so many different APIs and competing design decisions that went into it. It's like an archaeology of computing. I mean, you can just see decades of different teams at Microsoft competing with each other and layering this stuff on top. And the end result, yeah, it can be kind of filthy when you start to have to program this, but it's also a thoroughly addictive, stimulating puzzle to solve. So the situation when we began WireGuard was that Windows does not really provide a normal ton interface like the other operating systems do. On macOS, you have uton. The BSDs, you have just a normal ton tap. On Linux, you have devnet ton. But Windows, that's not really the case. And so for the most part, people who want to do interface level networking there in user space have been using OpenVPN's TAP6 driver. So that's usually where people start. So I took a look at that. And like the rest of the OpenVPN project, it's like terrible, crumbling, old code. There's like a DHCP parser in there, which you don't want in the kernel. It's really just a mess, and performance is bad. So it seemed clear from the get-go, all right, we can't use that if we're really serious about giving a piece of security software to users. It doesn't seem like there's much else around, so I guess we need to develop a kernel driver. So we made this thing called WinTun. You can read about it at winton.net, which is just a generic Layer 3 Tun device for Windows. Works pretty much the same way as DevNet Tun in Linux. There's some nice innovations in there where we use shared ring buffer between user space and kernel space so that there are fewer syscalls, because syscalls on Windows are somewhat slower than on Linux. And this winds up being a very short amount of code, but highly optimized, super fast. And now actually OpenVPN has ported their stuff over to using WinTun. So there's kind of some nice cross-pollination within the open source ecosystem there. So we developed WinTun, we got it signed by Microsoft and all set. So that was the first step. So now we have a ton interface we can use. So then the next thing was porting our WireGuard Go code over to Windows, making it work with the Windows service management architecture, adding a secure UI to it, making sure that configs are in a secure place of the Windows file system, that encrypted using the protection APIs Microsoft has. There's just kind of all sorts of weird APIs we had to interface with. There's also quite a lot of reverse engineering involved. The networking side of Windows is not super documented, and when I had talked to Microsoft about it, they wanted me to sign an NDA to get info about this, which of course I'm not going to do because it's open source software. So there is tons and tons of reverse engineering of kernel, of the NDIS driver, of various user space components in Windows so that I could find the right APIs to use. One interesting example is when you create a new network interface, Windows likes to give it a certain GUID so that it can identify that network. But with something that's a virtual interface in Layer 3, WireGuard or WinTun interfaces, it would give a different random one every time, and you would wind up with all these different networks that just clutter your system. A way to make that deterministic or to set it beforehand is completely undocumented, but it turns out there is a way. Microsoft uses it. And so we just had to kind of sleuth around to find it, and that was quite the effort. So there are just kind of tons of tricks throughout. And on Windows, a lot of emphasis was, all right, make this work for users, but also be sure that IT admins doing enterprise stuff can integrate it in all sorts of different ways. You can control from the command line. You can add and remove services using usual things. You can install it using the group policy installation. So we really tried to make it feel like a normal Microsoft system-level component, despite it being third-party.
You know, what I like about this, Jason, is what I'm hearing is this is not a – this is not – Windows was not a second-class citizen. It had your full attention. And, yeah, you started this project to be integrated into the Linux kernel, but the reality is no matter what a person's choice of platform is, they're going to be delivered a Class A experience when using WireGuard. And I think that speaks well of you and your team. Let's take a look at the other side of the equation. What was the process like getting WireGuard into the kernel? What was the what parts were good? What parts were bad? And what parts could maybe be improved?
Oof, it was a struggle. So in the beginning, I was most worried that the IPsec people would not want it in there because it kind of competes with it. You know, they might say, well, WireGuard already, or yeah, the Linux kernel already has this VPN thing. Well, you know, why do we need WireGuard? What's the point? But actually, I went to some Linux conferences and talked to the IPsec guys, and the IPsec maintainer is actually like a great guy and wonderful to work with. And he's thought through, you know, the same things I've had to think through with WireGuard. And that aspect was not a problem at all. And there's actually some really great reception from the networking community there. Did not expect that, but kind of right off the bat, they were very inviting. So that was nice. That's important because WireGuard goes through the networking subsystem tree, which is run by Dave Miller. So finding out that they were inviting was really a kind of a great way to get that in. The difficult part was the crypto subsystem. So Linux has a museum of ciphers inside the kernel. They've just added kind of everything over the years and in really bad implementations that have not been reviewed very much. And the way they're glued together is this super crazy complex system that was originally made for IPsec, where you have to like allocate memory to encrypt things and like go through all this really gross kind of Windows-style APIs to access it. And when I was writing WireGuard, I had initially tried to use this and concluded that there's really no way I can write secure code and use this API at the same time. It's just not going to work. It does not lend itself to good secure coding patterns. So I made a new API called Zinc, which is really basic. You have functions that take bytes, and the functions manipulate those bytes and return them to you. Because that's usually what crypto functions do. If you're encrypting something, you just pass it some bytes, and you get back some encrypted bytes. Or if you're hashing something, you pass it some bytes and you get back a shorter amount of bytes that represent the hash. Cryptography functions generally tend to be fun, kind of pure functions that don't actually need crazy API integration or crazy system APIs to use them or to implement them. They're usually just kind of pure functions. There are a couple exceptions, but very, very few. So the Zinc interface just gives you functions that take bytes and do things and give you other bytes, and that's it. There's also the issue of the implementations themselves of these primitives, where a lot of the primitives in the kernel had not been very well vetted or did not have great performance. So with Zinc and the cryptography layer, I've tried to have a combination of best-in-class performance, and then implementations that either are extremely widespread and have many eyeballs on them, or have been formally verified, meaning that a computer has generated them or checked them to ensure that there are no implementation bugs. And this sort of thing is important because there are a lot of primitives, for example, poly1305 or curve25519, that use large integers to do their calculations, integers that don't fit natively into a register on a machine, which means you have to split the integer into multiple different lins, they're called, that then use many variables to represent one integer. It's similar to how when we do arithmetic by hand, we have multiple digits to represent one number. And with a lot of these primitives that require multiple limbs to implement, there are very subtle carry bugs, where if you forget to carry something in a calculation from one limb over the next, in a lot of cases, you just might not catch it, and your test cases will continue to run, and your fuzzers will continue to work just fine. But then there's that very, very small probability that you get something where the result will be incorrect, and that can be exploited by hackers. So it turns out that formally verifying this variety of code is super important, because it's very easy to make these mistakes that are hard to catch. So Zinc tries to have a lot of formally verified code as well. So the Linux kernel challenge in this was to get Zinc upstream to say, all right, here's a separate crypto subsystem that's not hooked into any of this old legacy garbage and terrible APIs and a bunch of bad implementation. Here's like a new, fresh thing that's small and fast, good security posture, and, you know, the general WireGuard philosophy. And the crypto maintainers upstream would not have it. It seemed like they were kind of attached to their old thing. And, you know, they didn't really want this additional scrutiny. They didn't want this additional API. It was a pretty big roadblock. And I think for not altogether good reasons. So there was kind of a lot of politicking going on behind the scenes to get it in, to make it work. And ultimately, we reached, I think, a decent compromise for kind of all parties, where now Zinc lives kind of within the same directory structure as the existing crypto API, but we still have our raw basic functions. We still have the implementations and formally verified code that we wanted. And so it works and looks mostly the same as we originally intended. And now, in kind of an evolutionary way, we're morphing it toward what we originally intended. And I think we're getting there. I think the end result's going to be fine.
Now that this is part of the kernel, Jason, how does that work as far as maintaining it? Is it just you release a build and then one of the kernel devs pull it down when they feel like it? Or is it on you to continue to update what is being pushed to the kernel?
So I'm now a maintainer in WireGuard subsystem and, you know, a couple other random things in the kernel. If you look in the maintainers file, you can kind of see who is responsible for what piece of code, which winds up being rather nice because that file is machine parsable. So when people want to send a patch to the kernel, they run a little script that tells them who to send the patch to. So when WireGuard changes, I make those changes, or people send the changes to me, and then I commit it to my tree. And then every once in a while, I send those changes up to the net or the net next subsystem tree, which is run by Dave Miller. And then Dave Miller takes a look and pulls it in. And then Dave Miller, when he's ready, takes all the patches that he collects and sends them off to Linus. And then Linus releases the kernel. So WireGuard is part of the NetDev family, which is under Dave. And then, you know, networking in general, of course, is just under the kernel, which is Linus's.
How is the WireGuard experience on mobile? Is it the kind of thing that you would use to log into your company VPN and then pull some files or access some network resources and then disconnect? Or is it the kind of thing that I can fire it up and leave it running in the background?
Either way, you can turn it on and off really quickly because there's no visible connection phase that the user sees. So when you turn it on, it just kind of seems instant. Up, run, you turn it off, and you're off. But you could also leave it on all day. It's very light on battery because WireGuard was originally designed as a stealth VPN. I wanted to be able to insert this into networks and not be detected. So it doesn't send any traffic when there's no traffic to be sent. And it turns out that the stealth property winds up being really good for mobile phones because it doesn't turn on your mobile radio unnecessarily. So it doesn't use much battery when it's not in use. So you can just turn it on and leave it on all day and not really think about it.
Is WireGuard designed or can it be run from inside of a container?
Absolutely. There's extensive support for network namespaces. So you can do all sorts of interesting things where you have the socket that WireGuard uses to send the encrypted packets in one namespace and the tunnel interface in another namespace. So, for example, you could give a WireGuard interface to a container as its exclusive ability to access the internet so that all that container's traffic must go through WireGuard if it wants to get to the internet and it doesn't see any other network interface. Or you could reverse things. Maybe you want your normal desktop environment to only see a WireGuard interface, and then you want to put your Wi-Fi card, your Ethernet card inside of a container. And so then you can have one place where you have things just for Wi-Fi directly, and one things where you only are using WireGuard. So you can definitely separate things out into containers and any way you like there.
How about having more than one instance of WireGuard running on a single machine? Maybe you have a terminal services-like infrastructure in which more than one user is using one machine. Maybe you have a VPN at the office, a VPN at home, a cloud VPN, and you want to be able to be simultaneously connected to those networks. Could you have more than one instance of WireGuard running?
Yeah, that works too. You can either have one instance with multiple peers. So a server would have that, for example, where it has one interface, but lots of different people talk to the server. Or you could have multiple interfaces, each with one peer, or each with a couple peers, or whatever you want. The general structure of that is no different from anything else in the Linux networking stack, where you can add and remove virtual interfaces with the IP command. It just kind of works as a normal Linux networking component there. You can scale it any which way you want.
Jason, talk to me a little bit about the structure of WireGuard. Obviously, with Cisco AnyConnect and every manufacturer, every company has their own implementation of a VPN. What company or what commercial interest are you working towards?
So WireGuard is an open source project. It's free. It's not corporate backed. And the fact that we're in the Linux kernel with a networking protocol like this is really remarkable. It's hard to think of other examples where just kind of a grassroots, single author, open source, non-corporate project has really made it to a prime time Linux protocol. But WireGuard has indeed done that, and part of that is because I've not been doing the usual security consulting stuff in the last year. I've made WireGuard into my full time job. And this has been possible thanks to lots of different donations from individuals and from companies. If you go to wireguard.com/donations, you can donate. You can also see companies that have been sponsoring us. And really, this is what's made the project be able to live and breathe and made it work. And it's really kind of a unique thing in the networking sphere to have something like this, where it's not from some massive corporation like Cisco. It's really a ground up open source project. We're really not pursuing commercial things. We're just trying to get a really solid tool out there to be used with free clients and everything open source. I've just tried to kind of put my full time attention into that thanks to these donations.
What I like about that is it makes you beholden to the people that are actually using this project. It doesn't matter what any particular corporate interest is. The fact that you are being directly funded by the people that are actually using this means that you're just a community member, and these are just community members that are taking advantage of your project. Jason Donnefield, he is the lead developer for WireGuard, a modern, fast VPN. You can learn more at wireguard.com. Jason, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show. Man, did I learn a lot in this episode. We'll get you back on the program real soon.
Thanks a lot.
Now, if you want people like Jason on your end, working on your end-to-end open source VPN, then I encourage you to vote with your wallet. You heard him say it, right? This is what allowed the project to live, breathe, and work, is the donations that he was receiving over at wireguard.com/donation. And, the other thing I'll point out, too, if you work in a business where you're sitting inside of meetings, and you may not be the guy that controls the coin purse, but I implore you to have that conversation. I implore you in the strongest possible way to have the conversation with the guy who does write the checks and help him to understand the value in funding the software that you're using. Because if you want these people that are passionate and want to do a good job and provide the best possible product in an open source way, then we need to fund them, lest it becomes like OpenSSL and everybody uses it, but nobody wants to fund it. I can't encourage you enough. So I've made a donation to WireGuard as a thank you for the project and for all of Jason's hard work. And I would encourage you to do the same. We'll have a link in the show notes at podcast.asknoahshow.com, or you can go directly at wireguard.com slash donations. I also invite you to check out our WireGuard tutorial. Over 40,000 views on this video, and that tells me that this is a popular thing that people are trying to set up, and it tells me, and it leads me to understand that there are all sorts of different use cases, and people want something easy to spin up. And so if you want to find out how to set up WireGuard, I was going to do it in less than 10 minutes, and then the video ended up being like 6 minutes because it really is that easy. So we'll invite you to check that out. That's on our Mind Drip Media YouTube channel, as well as we'll have it linked again in the show notes.